this opportunity we have to worship the Lord together with you this morning. I appreciate the singing and the prayer that's been offered up, and we ask that you continue to pray for us what time we stand before you this morning. If you have your Bibles, I'd like to turn with me to the book of Ephesians chapter 5. I'd like to look at some things here in this context of Ephesians 5, but to start, we'd like to go to verse 14. Ephesians 5, verse 14. It says, "Wherefore, he saith, awake thou that sleepest, and arise from the dead, and Christ shall give thee light." Well, of course, this verse is buried in this context, and you can tell by the first word, "wherefore," this is not a very good place to start. But we will endeavor, the Lord being our helper, to look at some of the context in just a moment. But we want to understand the concept that is put forward in this verse before we move forward. So he says, "Awake thou that sleepest, and arise from the dead, and Christ shall give thee light." That's a very interesting statement to try to understand what he is referring to here. Awake thou that sleepest. You know, we at night go to sleep, and then we awake in the morning, some at different times than others. But when we awake from sleep, we're in a different state than we were before. When you're asleep, your reasoning goes to sleep, but your imagination runs wild. And so that's why you end up having dreams that don't make a whole lot of sense when you wake up, but they did at the time because your reasoning was asleep and your imagination was still going. Sleep is a very strange state that we get in. But when you're asleep, if you see someone who's asleep, sometimes you can't tell whether they're asleep or if they're dead. They can appear the very same. Now, unless they're snoring or unless they're moving around or wiggling, but if they're just lying there in that sleeping state, not moving, you don't know whether they're alive or they're dead. They look just like a dead person, and you can't tell the difference. Now, I believe, and we endeavor to prove this, that he's not talking about our natural sleep. Now, there are places in the Bible that do talk about that, but this isn't one of them. I believe he is under consideration a spiritual condition where the child of God has gone to sleep. If you are spiritually asleep, then you have become cold or complacent or just lack of activity, if I may say it that way, like a sleeping person is, and are blind in a sense that, you know, as a sleeping person's eyes are closed and they're not seeing and they're not in the reality that is around them. They're living in this dream fantasy world, then they don't see the real world that is around them like a sleeping person. Someone who is spiritually asleep is missing out on the kingdom and the spiritual blessings that the Lord does provide. And the next phrase sheds a little insight on this. "Awake thou that sleepest and arise from the dead." Now that sounds like he's telling you that you're dead and you need to arise from that state. Now, of course, we know that's impossible. If you are dead, you cannot arise from it. But what he is really saying is you're sleeping around all these dead corpses and you need to arise from the dead, where the dead are at. Now, what that means in a spiritual standpoint is that there are the people in this world who are dead in trespasses and sins, the wicked of this world. It is possible for the child of God to go off and live with them and try to conform to this world and be like the world. And in doing so, they are the one that's alive around the dead, but they're like the dead, but they're not dead. They're just asleep. And the child of God who goes out and lives in this world and is around the world and acts like the world and talks like the world, this commandment is for them to awake out of that condition and get away from that place where the dead are. Now, that hopefully makes this verse give us more sense. Awake thou that sleepest and arise from the dead, and Christ shall give thee light. Now, more on this in just a moment, but first, I'd like for us to consider the spiritual state that we get into that are like the natural ones. Naturally, we are in different states. We can naturally be standing or walking or running, or we can be sitting or laying or sleeping. Now, all those states that we are in naturally, we can also get into spiritually. And I'd like for us this morning to consider those different states and why we would need to be in one over another as we get into this. And so he says, wherefore he saith, awake thou that sleepest. Sleepest is one of those states that we want to look at for just a few moments. When you are asleep, you are missing out on so many things that are going on around you. We're going to come back to Ephesians 5, but I'd like to turn with you to Romans chapter 13. When you are asleep, you know, our children, when they were babies, we did our best to try to keep them asleep as long as possible because we had more peace while they were asleep. And we liked to have peace. That was hard to come by at those times. But it's not like that now. Now we're having to wake them up. Wake them up to go to school. Wake them up to eat breakfast. We're having to wake them up unless they set an alarm clock, which we like it when they do that. We don't have to wake them up. But we're trying to wake them up so that they can see, they can take part in the life that they're supposed to live. So many things are missed when you're asleep and what's going on and the beauty around you. But here in Romans chapter 13, it says this in verse 11. And that knowing the time, that now it is high time to awake out of sleep, for now is your salvation nearer than when we believe. The night is far spent, the day is at hand. Let us therefore cast off the works of darkness and let us put on the armor of light. Now I want you to notice how similar this is to Ephesians 5. He's telling them to awake those that are asleep because it's time to wake up. It's time to get up. It is time to do what he says here from a spiritual standpoint. The night is far spent, the day is at hand. Let us therefore cast off the works of darkness. Notice in Ephesians 5 it says, let us arise from the dead. Cast off the works of darkness. Let us put on the armor of light. That's going to be important later in just a moment. Verse 13, let us walk honestly as in the day, not in rioting and drunkenness. That's what you do if you're spiritually asleep. Not in rioting and drunkenness, not in chambering and wantonness, not in strife and envying. But put ye on the Lord Jesus Christ and make not provision for the flesh to fulfill the lust thereof. So it's high time to awake. It's time to wake up. Someone who is spiritually asleep is spiritually inactive, not doing anything, not seeing that they are not using the life that they have. But when it's time to wake up, it's time to get up. That is an interesting transition that someone makes when they get up. I don't know about you, but when you wake up. It's almost like, you know, like, well, all that I was dreaming wasn't really real. Okay, I get that. I'm glad. Sometimes it takes you a while to get woken up. Maybe you need some coffee. You know, that's why coffee sells so well. People are trying to get up, trying to get going. And to go from that sleeping state to an awake, alert state is not an easy transition. I'll say it's also not as easy spiritually. It's not easy to go from being a part of the world and the things of this world and the lust of our flesh that we try to satisfy out there to trying to serve the Lord. That is just as difficult spiritually as it is naturally to get up. Now some people, as soon as their feet hit the floor, they're ready to go and gone. But I would say not everyone's that way. But you know, when it comes to awaking and moving, Now it's time to do other things. And so if we get back to Ephesians chapter 5, there are other places that detail this, but I want to back up to verse 1 of Ephesians 5, because we mentioned the different states. And so you're asleep, you're lying down, and you sit up. Now you're sitting, now you stand up, and now you start moving. Well, where do we go? What are we to do? You know, when you start your day, you know, where does it go? Where does it lead? And when you start your day, where do you start walking? You know, that can be a very difficult thing for us to know. Where are we supposed to go? What are we supposed to do? Well, notice what he says here in Ephesians 5, verse 1. Be ye therefore followers of God as dear children. Where are we supposed to go? He just told us. We follow God as His children, as dear children. Verse 2. And walk, here it is, and walk in love. You know, it matters when we talk about walking. You know, if you're walking, you're getting from point A to point B. You would walk if you need to get somewhere where you're not. Now, if you're awake and you're sleeping and you're with all the world and you're with the dead and you're arising out, well, where do you go? Well, you start walking to get away from that, and you go where the Lord tells you to go, or the Lord leads you to go as His followers. And it not only matters that you're walking, but how you walk. Notice how He says, and walk in love. In love, as Christ also hath loved us, and hath given Himself for us an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet-smelling savor. Now he says we should walk in love. The way we walk, the manner in which you walk, it should be a walk in love, and it should be patterned after Christ who loved us. Notice, He walked in love. The things that He did while He was here on this earth, He did them because He loved us. Love was the original cause for saving God's people from their sins. He did all that He did because He loved us. And I would say that should be the motivation for our walk. It's not only our love for the Lord, but our love for His people. That we love the Lord with all our heart, soul, mind, and might, and love our neighbor as ourselves. And Jesus even said in John chapter 13, that we are to love one another as He has loved us. That's even love. That's loving more than loving your neighbor as yourself. That's loving as He loves, which is an even higher love than that. So Christ loved us and gave Himself for an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet-smelling savor. Oh, that we would offer our life in such a way that we'd be willing to lay down our life, sacrifice our life, sacrifice our wants and our desires and the things that we desire and maybe things that are attractive in this world in order to love and serve God. Because after all, I've found that in service to the Lord gives you far more than you could ever get out there. Loving the Lord and loving one another, walking in such a way. He's going to say more about how we are to walk. Let's keep reading. Verse 3, but fornication and all uncleanness or covetousness, let it not be once named among you as becometh saints. No, the way that we should walk should not include these things of the world. Verse 4, neither filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor jesting, which are not convenient, but rather giving of thanks. For this you know, that no whoremonger, nor unclean person, nor covetous man who is an idolater, hath any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God. Let no man deceive you with vain words, for because of these things cometh the wrath of God upon the children of disobedience. Be not ye therefore partakers with them. For ye were sometimes darkness, but now are ye light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. Now how we walk matters. We are to walk in love. And here in the 8th verse, he says to walk as children of light. The way in which we walk does matter. And so we walk in love. We walk as children of light. We're going to see another way that we are to walk in verse 15 in just a moment, walking circumspectly. But here he says for us to walk as children of light. You know, we will never blend in with the world that is full of darkness because we are light. Notice how he phrases this. Ye were sometimes darkness. He didn't say you're in darkness. He says you were darkness. He said, but now ye are not in the light. He says, now ye are light. Ye are light in the Lord. Jesus says in Matthew chapter 5, ye are the light of the world, a city that is set on a hill which cannot be hid. You know, we have a light inside of us because the Lord has shined in our hearts. As we said, I don't know if that was last Sunday or a couple Sundays ago in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, that as God created light in Genesis 1 verse 3, He did the same thing in our heart that was full of darkness. Now, there's a light there that the Lord put there. But if you are light, there's a very important role that you can play. You should play if you are light. You know, it's very helpful to have light to be where it's supposed to be. you know, there are some dark places at our house that I'm thankful I can flip the light switch on and the light comes on and suddenly it's no longer dark. But what if I flipped the light on and that light was gone? It's just stay dark. It wasn't there. And so if we are light, there's a certain place where we are supposed to be where the light will be present. Now we're getting to a different spiritual state. You know, when we talk about standing, you know, if you're walking, you're going from one place to another until you get to the right place. Once you get to the right place, there's no reason to leave. If you're at the right place, if you walk in the place where the Lord would have you to go, then you're walking to get to a certain place. Now, it says in Jeremiah chapter 6, verse 16, stand ye in the ways and see, and ask for the old paths, where is the good way, and walk therein. So he tells us there's a good way in which we are to walk. And he tells us in another place that we are to walk. You know, in fact, we can just go to Psalm 119:105. It says, thy word is a lamp unto our feet and a light unto our path. As we're talking about light, God's word tells us where we are and where we should go. It's a lamp unto our feet and a light unto our path. And it leads to the place where the Lord would have us to go as followers of God. And I'm just going to say, that place that we are to go is the Lord's kingdom. God's kingdom is the place where we should go. If we're going to walk as followers of God and walk in fellowship with God as He is our shepherd and is leading us, we need to know where is He walking. Go to Revelation chapter 1 and you find a description of Jesus Christ who is walking where? It tells us where He's walking. Among the candlesticks. There's seven candlesticks there. There are the seven churches of Asia. And he describes those candlesticks as if they were the church. Now, I think we can understand those candlesticks if we understand the Old Testament tabernacle a little better. Because that holy place in the Old Testament tabernacle is a picture of the church, as we said many times here. Only the priests could go into the holy place, and there are only three things there. There is a candlestick, there is a golden altar of incense, and there is a table of showbread. And as we think about what the church is today, the New Testament church, we can see the church in those three things. The table of showbread was laid out 6 by 6. There was always bread there. Anytime you went in there, there was bread there. And I'm thankful to tell you this morning that each time that we meet, the Lord provides the bread each and every time we meet. We can meet every day of the week and the Lord would provide. That we could meet twice a day or three times a day, every day of the week, and the Lord would always provide. That table of showbread, the bread is always there. That golden altar of incense that was burning and the incense went up is a picture of prayer. As we see that when we Jesus said this place is the house of prayer, the prayers of the saints that go up here. And I just wonder sometimes in the church service, how many prayers have gone up in this place? I'm so thankful that we are a praying people and the prayers that you offer up, maybe not publicly, but privately, that the Lord hears the prayer and the prayers are going up as that altar of incense shows us in the holy place. But the third thing, that candlestick. If you take that place, if you take the candlestick out, that just becomes a dark place. Dark, cold place if the candlestick's removed. What makes the church the church? We're not just a social gathering. What makes the church is the Lord has placed His candlestick here. We have light that shines in this place because the Lord has placed His candlestick here. So the candlestick's here. But what about the light? You know, the light was something that the high priest would constantly be working on the candlestick to make sure the light was shining. The reason we have light in this place is because the Lord has provided the light. And when we think about us being the light of the world, where is the appropriate place for our light to be shining? On the candlestick. When you come and join the church, you are taking your light and you're placing it on the candlestick. And so you are a source of light in this place because the Lord, dwelling in your hearts, has brought you to this place, and this is the place where we should stand. This is the place where we, with our light, should stand. You know, Gideon went with an army of 300 men against the Midianites, who were over 120,000, just spread out like grasshoppers. And Gideon and his 300 armies surrounded the Midianites. And they blew a trumpet. Every one of them blew a trumpet. And they had a clay pitcher with a light inside. And they broke the clay pitcher. And their light was shining. And it said, and every man stood in his place while the Midianites destroyed each other. They were confused and they just killed each other. But Gideon and his men just stood in their place holding their light. I tell you, what a great picture of you and I in the Lord's church, that although our light is obscured by this clay vessel, when it's broken, makes the light shine through more. And if we come to this place and we are standing in our place and we're holding the light, then we'll see how important it is. Now, if you skip on down to the 6th chapter of Ephesians, he tells us, starting in verse 10, that we are to be strong in the Lord and the power of His might, and we're to put on the whole armor of God for a certain reason. Notice what it is. Verse 11, Ephesians 6. Put on the whole armor of God that we may be able to what? That we may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. I tell you, the child of God walking, getting to the right place, and now standing. And not just standing, but standing against something. You know, it's important that we make a stand for things, but also a stand against things. I trust that we, here in the church, we stand for God's true doctrine as the Bible teaches it, and we believe it, and we teach it, and we're not adding anything to this or trying to take anything from it. But I'll tell you, when it comes to you and I being attacked, as we hear about the temptations, Brother Joe Myers preached on Wednesday night about the temptations of Christ and the way the devil tempts us. You know, we've mentioned walking, but we hadn't said anything about running yet. You know, I don't know what your feelings are about running, but walking will get you somewhere, but running will get you there faster. But it also takes a lot more energy, and some people are not willing to devote that energy to. And some will say, if you ever see me running, you need to start running too, because there's something after me. I'm not just going to be running for no reason. Well, if we see that running carries with it a sense of urgency that walking does not, when we see temptations coming our way from the devil, it's time to get out of there and run. You know, this world is a place to run away from because of all the temptations that are there. But if we are in the Lord's kingdom, in the Lord's church, in the right place, and here comes the devil then, it's not time to tuck tail and run. It's time to stand against the wiles of the devil. Now, if we're out there, and we're where we shouldn't be, or where we necessarily don't want to be, and we have to run away and flee, and that's all right. But if we're here, it's no time to be running. It's time to be standing and fighting. Now, notice what he says here in verse 12. We wrestle not against flesh and blood. There's no person that is our enemy. We should never view other people as our enemy. Well, this brother or sister doesn't like you. Well, I'm sorry about that, but they're not my enemy. The devil is the one who's my enemy, and theirs too. And I wish that people would see that people are not our enemies. It's the devil that is in the matter. You know, and he's not an enemy like, you know, when the American Revolution took place, the soldiers would just line up on the battlefield in their uniforms and you could tell who was who. That's not the kind of enemy the devil is. He isn't out there wearing his uniform. He's hiding in the shadows and in the darkness. And if you go to those places, that's where you'll find him. But staying away and staying in the light will bless you to avoid a lot of that. And so he's lurking and he's scheming. He's always trying. Notice what he says here. We wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Wherefore, take unto you the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. He keeps mentioning standing. You know, the enemy, if you go in the military or some other type of fight, you'll find when you're on the ground, you're a lot more vulnerable than when you're upright. And if the devil can get you down on the ground and get you in a very vulnerable position as a sheep, when a sheep gets on its ground on its back, it cannot even roll over and stand up. And you're in a very vulnerable position. And so standing, therefore, as he says in verse 14, he just keeps mentioning stand against, withstand, and to stand. The stand is so important. But how can we ensure that we stand? Well, we need to take some time understanding the whole armor of God and what it provides to the child of God for us to be able to stand. Because after all, if we get back to chapter 5, we are the light in the Lord here in verse 8. And the light needs to be in its place. We need to walk to make sure we're in the right place at the right time, and our light is where it needs to be on the candlestick. We are to walk to get to the Lord's house, and I will say that the Bible describes God's house in Micah chapter 4, verse 1, as a mountain that is established in the top of the mountains. And so to get to God's house, you know, you may say, well, I'm going to run to God's house. Have you ever tried to run up a mountain? When I was in Colorado Springs, we had this guy. He was in very good shape. And they had this marathon called the Pikes Peak Marathon. And I hiked up Pikes Peak and hiked down. It took me several days to recover from that because of the soreness of my knees and hips and everywhere else. But I was walking. And I asked him, I said, so you did the Pikes Peak Marathon. You were running? Yeah, I was running. I said, oh my goodness, I just can't even imagine what it was like to run up that mountain. But I'll tell you, you come to the house of God, running carries with it a sense of urgency, and we should come to the house of God with urgency. But I'll tell you, it is difficult. It is a difficult lot in life to do what the child of God should do, and to do it consistently and with such urgency. And so there must be a pace that we set out. In Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1, he says, let us run with patience the race that is set before us. And so there is a race set before us, and we should have a sense of urgency about it, but we've got to pace ourselves. Not just taking off sprinting, because you cannot maintain that pace, but running with patience, this long distance race in life, but doing it with a sense of urgency. You know, when Jesus was 12 years old, he told his parents, when they were searching for him for 3 days in Jerusalem, and they found him in the temple, sitting there and listening to the doctors and hearing them and asking them questions. He says, why have you done this to us? How is it that you sought me? Wist ye not that I must be about my Father's business? He had a sense of urgency, even at the age of 12, to be about his Father's business. And we should have the same sense of urgency that involves running our race with patience. But we are to walk as children of light, here in verse 8. For the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness and righteousness and truth, proving what is acceptable unto the Lord, verse 11, and have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them. Don't fellowship them, reprove them, these unfruitful works of darkness. For it is a shame even to speak of those things which are done of them in secret. But all things that are approved are made manifest by the light, for whatsoever doth make manifest is light. Now we're to our text. Wherefore, he saith, awake thou that sleepest, and arise from the dead, and Christ shall give thee light. Verse 15. See then that ye walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the days are evil. So he tells us another way to walk. Circumspectly. That would be like walking and looking all around. If you're ever in a place of foreign land or big city and there's people all around, I'd encourage you to walk this way. You know, there's too many people these days that are now walking and just looking on their phone. They don't have no idea what's going on around them. Or if you're walking with your head down, you're not seeing anything around you. We live as God's people in a world that is full of darkness, and Satan has snares. They're waiting for us that if we're not paying attention, we could easily fall into those snares. And so he tells us to walk circumspectly. We should, in fact, I would say, spiritually speaking, this also has to deal with us looking inwardly and outwardly. That our walk inwardly and outwardly is where it ought to be. You know, you and I, we come here once a week, here on Sunday morning, spend an hour and a half or so with each other. But there's a great amount of time during our week where we're not together. And that's where we should be spending time in private devotion with the Lord, and spending time with His Word, and praying to the Lord, and spending time. You know, in Matthew chapter 6, He lists three things that we're to be doing privately. He talks about prayer, giving alms, and fasting. Those are three things that are between you and the Lord. And it's something that we, in private devotion, how we, in our heart, are doing what we ought to do. And walking circumspectly, it's so easy for things and sin and things of this world to get into our heart. You know, our heart is like soil out there, that the grass and the weeds come up upon it so easily that you have to constantly keep it tilled. We have a ball field, our little league field, and I will say, by the end of our little league season, we all get burnt out with that place and the amount of work that it takes to keep that place running. And when the season's over, we've all had enough. But the problem is, that's the time when you need to get work done. We've been redoing the fence and painting painting the backstop, and there's people out there trying to practice while we're doing this. That's just not the time to be doing all that. But we should have been doing it in August, but we all had enough of ball in August. We don't have anything to do with it. Well, whenever the season rolls around, that infield is totally covered with grass because we haven't maintained the dirt for the whole off season. And so we have to come through there, and we have to till up that grass to get it off of there. And you have to go through it multiple times because there's so many roots and so many things that are still there. Well, I'll tell you, your heart is the same way. It requires constant maintenance. And we must constantly be getting the cares of this life and the flesh and the pride and all the things that grow up around us to get back to that tender part that the Lord has provided to us when we're born again. Walking circumspectly is dealing with our inward walk as well as our outward walk and interacting with one another. Not as fools, but as wise. You know, in Matthew 25, I'm tempted to turn over there to it, but I'm scared I'll get bogged down over there. But there's 10 virgins in Matthew 25 at the beginning of that chapter. And 5 were wise and 5 were foolish. And the wise took oil for their lamps and the foolish did not. And because they didn't know when the bridegroom was going to come. And they were all 10 asleep when he showed up. And so the wise trimmed their lamps, and the foolish said, "Hey, we don't have enough oil. Give us some of your oil." You know, so many people in this life just don't prepare themselves for what they're about to get into, and they rely on other people. Well, anyway, when it comes to spiritual things and the spiritual life, you and I don't know when the Lord's going to come to meet us. He comes unannounced. He comes unexpectedly, and we need to be ready for those moments of fellowship, and we miss out on them if we're not prepared and ready. He tells us here to walk not as fools, not like the foolish virgins, but as wise, as those who are ready to meet with the Lord, those who have their light burning and shining and ready as it ought to be. And it says, redeeming the time because the days are evil. This is a favorite expression of mine, redeeming the time. Because, you know, time is one of those things you can never get back. And time is one of those things that we so often waste. We waste time, and we can never get that time back until it's too late, until we realize, and then it's too late. Right now, we need to be redeeming the time. We need to be making good use of the time that the Lord has given to us, because the days are evil. We need to use the time that the Lord has given to us. So far, we've been talking about sleeping. We've been talking about walking. We've been talking about running. But we hadn't said much about the other two. We're going to very quickly move to Song of Solomon chapter 2. The other two, sitting and laying. If you're in the right place and you have fought the battles, you've stood, and now it's time to rest, you sit down. Now, you sit down when the work is complete. I'm thankful to tell you this morning that we rest in the finished work of Jesus Christ. In that holy place and in the tabernacle, there was no chair. The work of the priest was never done. But Jesus, as our high priest, he finished the work and declared in John 19:30, it is finished. He finished the work that God gave him to do. And where is he now? He is sitting at the right hand of God. He's sitting down. Why? Because the work is complete. And you and I here dwelling in peace, dwelling in the finished work of Christ. We read here in Song of Solomon chapter 2, verse 3. As the apple tree among the trees of the wood, so is my beloved among the sons. I sat down under his shadow with great delight, and his fruit was sweet to my taste. Now picture in your mind going out in the woods and, you know, the deer and the squirrels may find something to eat out there, but there's not much for you and I. Pine trees, an oak tree, I mean, maybe you like eating acorns, that's not really on my list, but there's nearly not much to eat out there. And magnolia trees, those little things, I'm not going to eat that. There's just nothing to eat out there. But imagine there's this one tree that's different from all the rest, an apple tree, that you can go out in there. And so she describes her beloved. That's what the Son of God is to you and I. He is the chief among 10,000. He is the lily of the valley, the rose of Sharon. He's all these things. And she says, so is my beloved among the sons. I sat down under his shadow. During the heat of the day, she found refuge. She found a place under his shadow with great delight. And his fruit was sweet to my taste. What she got to partake in was sweet. It was not only good for her, it's healthy for her, but it was sweet to taste. And what a blessed condition it is. This is the life of the child of God who has awakened out of their sleep and arisen from the things of this world and come to the Lord's King. They've walked and maybe even ran to the Lord's kingdom and the Lord's people, and they've enjoyed company with the Lord. They now enjoy the finished work of Jesus Christ and sitting down in that restful, peaceful state under his shadow with great delight, and his fruit was sweet to my taste. Turn me to Psalm 4. We'll go here and close. Because at the end of the day, I enjoy sitting, but there is a position I enjoy more than that, and that's laying down. Now, you really can't do that until the work truly is finished, and not just finished, but you are in a state of peace and safety. Now, I would just not encourage you to lay down and in the middle of a city. You know, there were some angels that came to Lot one time in the city of Sodom, and they said, "We're just going to abide here in the street." They're going to, and Lot's like, "No, no, no! You don't want to do that." He knew what that city would be like after dark, and he encouraged them and made them come to his house. Now you've got to make sure before you lay down that you are in a place of safety and peace before you are willing to lay down and go to sleep. Notice here in Psalm 4, verse 8, the last verse. "I will both lay me down in peace and sleep, for thou, Lord, only makest me dwell in safety." Now, I believe this applies from a natural standpoint, but I trust we can see how this applies from a spiritual standpoint. Not saying that we go back to sleep spiritually, but saying that we can lay down and be in a safe, peaceful place, because he says, "Thou, Lord, only." The only way you truly have safety and peace is if the Lord is the one that's providing that safety and peace. But he says, "I will lay me down in peace and sleep, for thou, Lord, only makest me dwell in safety." I love the thought of we as the Lord's sheep being led by the shepherd. We go where he has us to go. He leads us beside still waters. He makes us lie down in green pastures. And then there comes a point in which we sleep when he tells us to sleep. Not when the world tells us. Not when we want to do it. But he knows our condition. He knows when we're tired. He knows we need to rest. And with the Lord leading us, we have arisen from the dead. We've gone where the Lord would have us to go. We get there. We stand there, our light shining there. We sit down under his shadow, and with great delight his fruit is sweet to our taste. And now the Lord gets us to that, I just want to call it a perfectly comfortable state. That's what I look for when I'm trying to sleep, is that comfortable position and state that the Lord leads us to. And the Lord, who knows all of our needs, takes us to these places if we, as followers of him, go where the Lord would have us to go. May the Lord help us to redeem the time to do these things as the Lord would have us to do them. I thank you for your good attention this morning.